Today on the Travel and Entertainment Guys, it's a special Best Of show. Hi there, Tom Romano here with you. Mark is on the road to Mackinac Island, so I'm in control. Coming up in about a minute, a special Travel Channel show interview with a modern-day Indiana Jones, Josh Gates, host of Expedition Unknown. Then at 3:20, we'll talk with Jack Maxwell, host of the show Booze Traveler, followed by a visit with Resort Rescue's Shane Green. Then after the news at 3:35, we'll switch gears and bring you an interview with legendary performer-songwriter Barry Manilow. Then at 3:46, Travel Guys Road Reporter Steve LaRosa will join me as he and I sit down with country rock legend from the Buffalo Springfield and Poco, Richie Furay. Then we've saved the best for last as we revisit one of Mark Hoffman's famous lists. This one, What Not to Do While Traveling to Your Favorite City. All that in the next hour right here on the Travel and Entertainment Guys.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again.
I'm a traveling man, king of the road,
riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
We are the Travel Guys on KFBK. Mark Hoffman to my left. I'm Tom Romano, and we're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as promised, we've got another special guest from the Travel Channel. And this time, this is one that, boy, I'll tell you, I'm really, really excited about, because it's the kind of thing that if I had an opportunity to do it, this is the kind of show that I would do. It's called Expedition Unknown, hosted by Josh Gates. Now, Josh, you might have seen him on the Sci-Fi Channel, Destination Truth, also Ghost Hunters Live, just to name a few. Josh, welcome to the program, Mr. Expedition Unknown.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, first, for those that haven't had a chance to hear or know much about the new series, why don't you go ahead and tell folks what to expect on Expedition Unknown?
Sure. Expedition Unknown is a travel adventure series, and really what we're doing is investigating some of the world's most iconic mysteries and legends, things like the search for Amelia Earhart or Captain Morgan's lost pirate ship, missing temples, buried treasure, things like that. Really cool stories. And we go around the world and we go to places where archaeologists and scientists and researchers are making breaks in these cases. There's new evidence in these cases. And so we go to those spots, put boots on the ground, and we have our own expedition where we try to see if we can get to the truth behind these stories.
Now, I got a chance to see bits and pieces of some of the premiere and one particular piece of film that has little snippets from all the different shows. And, boy, I'll tell you, you put your life at risk on a regular basis in filming these, don't you?
Well, the stories definitely have, as the title, suggests, a real unknown element. And that can be risky, but it's also in some ways the heartbeat of the show, and it's what makes the show so fun, is that we don't really know where the journey is going to take us. And so we do sometimes get in a bit over our heads, or we find ourselves in some pretty exotic destinations. But we really want the viewer to feel like they're on a real expedition and really like they're with us in the field. And so the unknown is just a big part of that.
The way it's shot and the way you guys handle the production element of it is very exciting. It really does. It sort of sucks you into the action. And I know I found myself gasping and worrying about you. You know, you're going across a river, holding onto a rope that's tied to the other side. And my first thought is, Josh, where is your life jacket?
It's true. You sound like my mom, and I appreciate the concern. But that's the kind of spirit of the show is being out of the backcountry and really having these real adventures and knowing that these stories, these legends and these mysteries, they take place in very far flung places. And so we're just so thrilled to be able to share some of those spots with our viewers. You know, we're going to deep in the jungles of Cambodia. We're going to Myanmar, which used to be Burma, of course, in Southeast Asia, a country that's very seldom been seen by outsiders or been filmed. So going to some very off-the-grid spots, and that's part of the adventure.
Now, you deal with the unexpected on a regular basis here. With that being said, what have you run into that, to you, was the most unexpected of the unexpected.
Yeah, I think in our premiere episode, we set a helicopter down in the backcountry of Papua New Guinea, deep out in the jungles, and stepped out of this helicopter to see members of a tribe, you know, coming out, rushing out from the trees, brandishing spears and bows and arrows. You know,
that wasn't planned.
No, and I'm literally standing there like it was almost like an out of body experience. Looking at it almost like a muse, like, oh, that's so funny. That's like something out of a movie. And then being like, wait a minute, this is happening. You know, in our second week's episode, we traveled through a landmine ridden jungle in Cambodia, and actually went with landmine clearing experts. And that's probably the most harrowing thing that I've ever done on the show is to travel to an active landmine field. Really. Just, I mean, you think you have a bad job. Anytime you think your job is tough, believe me, being a landmine clearing expert in Cambodia is definitely a tougher day at the office.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. What have you learned, in Josh, that you can take away from doing these shows?
I think one of the things that I've learned is really how much we don't know. You know, in doing the Earhart story, we're looking for this obviously very famous aviatrix who vanished three quarters of a century ago, and yet we've just this last year lost a modern jumbo jet from Malaysia Airlines that we can't find. And I think one of the things that the show reinforces is this idea that there is a lot of the world that we don't have control over, a lot of the world that we don't have mapped or have explored. I think this notion that we've kind of been everywhere, seen everything in the internet age is really not true. There are great mysteries out there yet to be discovered. There are amazing adventures to be had and a lot to be learned. And so I think that I feel very hopeful about a lot of the places that we've been, because I know that there are great discoveries to be made out there.
It looks like when you set out to pick the destinations for Expedition Unknown, you pick things that a lot of people have heard about over the years, the Amelia Earhart and Jesse James and Captain Morgan and the Lost City, the Amber Room in Germany and in Russia, and that particular adventure. Now, that one is something that I had not heard much about. Tell us a little bit about the search for the Amber Room. What is that?
Yeah, you know, this is it's kind of a great trivia question. You know, what is the most valuable object to ever be stolen? And I think a lot of people would probably say that it's a painting or a diamond or something. And in fact, it is an entire room. It's something known as the Amber Room. It was part of a palace in St. Petersburg in Russia. And it was a whole room that was covered in amber and gold and precious stones. And it was plundered by the Nazis in World War II. They broke down the entire room and packed it into crates. And they shipped it back to Germany by train. And the room has never been seen again. And so there's this fierce debate as to whether or not the Amber Room could still be out there, hiding somewhere, waiting to be discovered. And there's actually some amazing evidence that it may still be out there.
You know, millions of people are huge fans of the Indiana Jones series. And, you know, you watch this program, and actually, I'll tell you, Josh, you're kind of the modern-day Indiana Jones.
Well, I don't know about that, but I will take the compliment. That's, you know, obviously I grew up loving Indiana Jones, being a huge fan of things like that and the Goonies. And certainly I will say one comparison that I think is probably apt is that the stories that we're investigating feel like there's something right out of Indiana Jones. You know, these are mystical relics with supernatural legends associated with them. So, you know, if you're a fan of that kind of adventure, that's really the kind of stuff that we're investigating. And we're just so excited to take viewers along for the ride.
What went into choosing your destinations?
You know, we wanted to go to places where there was some heat on the story. You know, we don't want to go investigate the mystery of the unicorns or dragons or, you know, things like that. We want to go to a place where researchers are saying there are fresh leads here. There is new evidence here. We don't want to retread a story just for the sake of retelling it. We want to go somewhere where there are breaks in the case. I think there's no question that there are still discoveries out there to be made. Will it end up being a city of gold in the Amazon, or will it just be a ruin? You know, those are the kind of things we don't know about. But I'll tell you what, there's a lot out there that we don't know, and I think some of these legends may prove to be true.
Talking with Josh Gates, cultural explorer, adventurer, host of Expeditions Unknown. Josh, thanks. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you want to make sure that our listeners know about your new television series?
No, we're just, you know, we're just so excited to have folks tune in, and they can learn more about the show at TravelChannel.com or follow me on Twitter at Joshua Gates.
You're listening to the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on KFBK. Now, don't forget, you can follow every show, present and past, at TravelGuysRadio.com, as well as listen to podcasts of previous shows there, as well as on the iHeartRadio app or KFBK.com. Just search Travel Guys. Now, coming up next, a visit with the host of the Travel Channel's Booze Traveler, Jack Maxwell. That's next. Don't miss it. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to The Travel Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, every Sunday at 3 o'clock right here on KFBK. Mark Hoffman is on the road today. I'm Tom Romano. One of my favorite Travel Channel shows is one called Booze Traveler. Let me introduce to you somebody you may have seen on a number of television programs, has had a role in, gosh, in Lost and Ugly Betty and 24 Hour and Without a Trace, bringing to the program the new host of a show called Booze Traveler. On the Travel Channel, it's Jack Maxwell. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, let's tell folks a little bit about what this Booze Traveler is all about. It sounds like something anybody that enjoys a good drink would wanna be in your shoes.
Yeah, it's a great gig. But even if you don't enjoy a good drink, if you enjoy culture or if you enjoy people or places, we bring it all of that to you, because it's really about a celebration and an exploration of all of the people, places, and cultures of the world, and we do it through the lens of a cocktail glass.
Now, I understand you already have about 15 one-hour episodes in the can. Tell us a little bit about some of the places that that you plan to take us.
Oh, well, so fascinating. You know, we were cruising down the Amazon in Peru, and I was looking out for caiman and snakes, maybe. They were trying to get me, and I finally get off the boat, and we walk a long way through the jungle and come upon this native tribe. And after some back and forth, they accepted us. They cooked me piranha.
Oh, boy.
And taught me how to do poison darts, and then said, hey, would you like a drink? Through an interpreter, of course. Uh-huh. And I said, great, but I don't see anything around. So then the chief makes a motion with his arm, and all the women of the tribe get up, get together, get down, and eat this potato, and lean over this bowl, and after 3 or 4 minutes, spit into it. They ferment that, and that becomes spit beer. That was fascinating to me, and of course I tried it, because they were generous enough to invite me into their way of life, so I'm gonna drink it all in, so to speak.
Wow, that's an amazing story, Jack. Tell us one more.
Oh, sure. How about Mongolia? We tracked down a nomad family after looking for camel footprints, which led to camels, which led to this family. It took forever to find them, and we get there, and to be accepted in, they offer you camel milk vodka in a bowl. I took a sip. They said, oh, you have to finish it or you're insulting the family and the culture. So I finished a whole bowl of camel milk vodka. Then they said, well, actually, if you really want to show that you're a guest and you appreciate their hospitality, you have to drink 3 bowls in a row. So I did that because I would never insult the culture or people, or a wonderful family like they were.
Yeah, how'd that work out for you?
I'm saying right here for the record, Jack Maxwell, the Booze Traveler, says 3 bowls of camel milk vodka might be too much and may lead to a headache. Use only as directed. So, you know, but it's not a show about drinking. It's a show about drinks. We find out what people drink, why they drink it, and then the stories they tell when they do, which are fascinating.
This is awesome. It's called Booze Traveler. It's the Travel Channel's new original series. It's Mondays on the Travel Channel near you.
We hope you join us. Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome. We are the Travel Guys on KFBK. I'm Tom Romano, along with Mark Hoffman from Sports Leisure Vacations. And as you heard at the beginning of the show, a special guest on the program, if you watch the Travel Channel, it's called Resort Rescues. It features New Zealand-born hospitality expert Shane Green, who's going to travel the country on a mission to help ailing hotels and resort owners figure out what they're doing wrong inside their establishments and, well, you know, give them the good news.
or the bad news, how so to speak. Shane Green has, he's been doing this for a while. Shane, tell our listeners a little bit about your history, would you?
Yeah, thank you so much, Tom, and thanks for getting us on. So we've been doing this for almost 25 years, started down in New Zealand actually as a bouncer in a hotel, so go figure, humble beginnings. But getting in the hotel industry, I've been able to travel the world, and we've had our business for about 15 years. And the business SGEI actually helps owners with their hotels opening or transforming them. And over that 15 years, we've probably touched about 50 to 60 hotels. So about a year ago, Travel Channel approached us with the idea for the show, and they knew that because travel and hotels go so well together and the success of their other hotel show, Hotel Impossible, they saw that there could more could be done. And as a result, our show started to come together. And basically what happens is owners bring us in many times, either independent owners of resorts. They got into it for one reason or the other, usually with very little experience. And basically the whole investment, many times their emotional sanity, their family, everything's being put on the line. And we get to come in with my team. We put up hidden cameras all over the resort so we can watch the customer experience going on. But what's kind of cool is that at the same time, we show what happens behind the scenes. So if you've ever been somewhere and gone, wow, that was great service, or that was the worst service I've ever had, what's going on? Why did that happen? The show shows that. So the hidden cameras kind of bring that to life. I think it's pretty cool.
Shane, tell me, how do you pick your resorts to rescue?
That's a great question. They actually pick us. I think one of the first pieces is that an owner recognizes they need help. This isn't something that you can force on somebody. There is nothing worse than trying to help an owner that doesn't want to be helped. So when an owner reaches out to us and says, listen, I need some help, and I'm not sure what it is, we do pre-interviews, and then the team and I actually do an exhaustive, competitive, and analysis online. And if we recognize that, one, the hotel has actually got so many good things going for it, and we recognize that the owner's really got this passion and is very genuine about what they're doing, that is the perfect combination. The show is not about going and doing this big renovation and makeover. This is more about a personal transformation with the staff when it comes to customer service, but many times it's the owner and their leadership style and what they're focusing on in the day-to-day.
So there is a kind of a common thread, a common place that you see errors at resorts and hotels being made in regards to customer service.
Correct, and across the board. One of the biggest ones you see is actually in the first 10 minutes of arriving at a hotel. The first 10 minutes of a resort experience actually will define for the customer how everything else goes. And what I see is that owners and managers aren't focusing on making that first 10 minutes a wow. In the first 10 minutes, the guest pulls up to the front of the hotel, they interact with the front desk person, they walk to their room, and they walk into their room. We know the first three things you'll do when you walk into your room at a resort is check the view, check the bed, and check the cleanliness in the bathroom. If you nail that first 10 minutes, everything else tends to go well. If you don't, you're in for a whole heap of trouble, because once the guest has decided that there's issues, they're not going to let it go.
Were there any of these rescues that were failures, that you came back in 30 days and things had not gotten any better or even gotten worse?
You know what? There wasn't any situation where it got worse. What came back is sometimes the surprises. Many times we actually empower owners to really take control. And I think it's always interesting how quickly a transformation can start to take effect. On Tuesday night, you're going to meet Patty Johnson, the new Perry Hotel. Here is a woman who her husband and her bought the hotel 3 years ago. A year ago, her husband divorces her, leaves her, because he says, you know what, you love the hotel more than you love me. This woman is beaten up. And when we first sort of, you know, come on board, she is so determined, so passionate, doesn't have a lot of experience, but she is just beaten up. The really cool part is coming back 30 days later and seeing a very empowered and strong person coming out. And it's almost, you know, it's that reminder of what can happen in a short amount of time with a little direction. So no one sort of fell into the failure category. Now, I also say that it's not about it just 30 days. My team and I keep track of these hotels for months. In fact, we'll still be talking to these hotels a year from now, because like all things, habits take time to take hold. And if you don't have someone keeping pushing you, it's easy to go back to old ways.
It's called Resort Rescue with a host, New Zealand-born hospitality expert Shane Green, our special guest today on The Travel Guy. Shane, thanks so much for taking the time with us, and we'll see you on resort rescues.
Tom, thank you. And thanks for all your fans out there tuning in on Tuesday night. We really appreciate it. Have a great day. Enjoy your Sunday.
We are the Travel Guys here on KFBK. And when we come back after the news, a visit with one of the greats in the music world, legendary songwriter, performer, Mr. Barry Manilow. Keep it here. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom Romano. My co-host Mark Hoffman is on the road to Mackinac Island today. And today's show features some of the best of the Travel Guys. We visited with some of the folks from the Travel Channel's programming in the first half hour of the show. Second half hour, we're going to feature some of the best entertainment interviews that we've done over the past year. And let's kick it off with this one right here. What an honor it is to have the man. If this was TV, you would recognize him immediately, would require no introduction. But since it's radio, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce to you Mr. Barry Manilow. Barry, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure, Tom. Nice to talk to you.
You know, a lot of people are, you know, very obviously very familiar with your career and your music and all the great hits that you've written and performances and such, but probably a lot of folks may not know that you have a passion for music education. Tell me a little bit about the Manilow Music Project.
Well, you know, years ago, I realized that they're running out of instruments in schools all over the country, so whenever I go on the road like I am now, in every city I donate a piano, and then I do this instrument drive. I ask the audiences to bring down their instruments that they're not using. If they're just collecting dust in the attic or the basement, bring it down to the arena, and we give you two free tickets, and then we take your instruments and we fix them up, and then we give them to the school district in every city. And it's been working. We've been collecting a lot of instruments in every city, and we give them to the high schools and middle schools that are running out of instruments, because I really believe that music for young people is so important, even if they don't become professionals. Music classes really change young people's lives. I speak to the principals and the teachers. They always tell me that their grades go up. They learn how to interact with other people. It really is. It's not just playtime. It really makes a difference. So I do what I can do.
Barry has donated a piano to the Sacramento Unified School District. And again, the concert is on April the 17th. It's a Friday. And as Barry mentioned, if you bring an instrument, I wouldn't necessarily bring a piano. I think that might be...
No, but, you know, we've been getting a lot of guitars,
there you go.
Drum sets, a lot of trumpets, a lot of reeds, and all of it it's really important because they're running out of instruments.
So bring your instrument to the box office there at the Sleep Train Arena, and you can pick up a pair of free tickets to Barry's show.
Somebody gave us a kazoo. Now, you know, that's pushing it a little.
Barry, tell me how music education played a part, if it did at all, in your career.
You know, I went to a real dump of a high school in Brooklyn, New York. As a matter of fact, it was voted the most dangerous high school in all of America. Oh, that's so. The high school I went to. But even though I went to a school like that, they had an orchestra class. And that orchestra class changed my life. I don't know whether I'd be talking to you after all these years if I hadn't joined that orchestra class. I wasn't very good at the clarinet, but it really did start me off on my way of becoming a musician.
So clarinet was your first instrument then?
Yes, can you believe it? I was the first clarinetist. Can you imagine the rest of the orchestra if I was the first clarinetist? But it was fun, and it started me off on the way to being a musician.
Now, Barry, you've written just infinite number of great songs. You know, we played a little bit of Mandy. I Write This Song. What is your all-time favorite?
You know, I usually say Could It Be Magic, because that even came before Mandy. Could It Be Magic, I based it on a Chopin prelude, and beautiful song. But these days, I got to tell you, I think it's Mandy at this point, because it's not just a pop song to me anymore. It is so much more than just a song. It represents, you know, the beginning of my life. You know, I was so young then. I was so unprepared for what happened after I made that record. When I sing Mandy these days, these memories keep flooding through my head. So I guess I have to say that my favorite right now is Mandy.
Now, somebody asked me, they says, I told them I was going to spend some time with you and do an interview. And they says, tell me, be sure to ask Barry, is there really this Copacabana place? Does it really exist? What were you writing about?
Well, there was the famous Copacabana in New York City. Everybody played the Copa when it was big. Frank Sinatra, Peggy Lee, everybody played the Copa. It was a big deal. When you went to your prom, everybody went to the Copa. That's why Bruce and I wrote Copa, because it was a big, big deal.
Now, I got to ask you about the show coming up on the 17th. What are people in store for on one last time? And I also have to ask you, really, is this really going to be the last time?
Come on. It's the last big tour. I'm not retiring. I'll be making records and doing one-nighters. But, you know, I've been roaming the earth for 40 years with these big tours that keep me away from home for weeks and months at a time. It's the end of those kinds of tours. This is the last time I'll be doing one of those big tours. But you know, I'll be around making music for as long as I can.
And what's this show? What's this show going to be like?
Well, I'm trying to do as many of the big hits and even the smaller hits as I can. I figured if this is one of the last ones. Not only will I do all the ones that I usually do, which is Mandy and Copa, and I write the songs and Can't Smile Without You, and Even Now, and this one's for you. But I also am dropping in some of the other ones that I haven't done in years, like Read 'Em and Weep or Somewhere Down the Road or Some Kind of Friend. And I'm just doing as many of them as I can fit into these hours that I have.
I understand also that the CD My Dream Duets is still doing extremely well. And this is a very interesting concept.
What a thrill that was.
Tell our audience, for those that haven't had a chance to understand what My Dream Duets is all about, explain how you created this particular album.
Well, my record company asked me if I would do a duet album, and everybody seems to be doing a duet album. And I thought, how do I make my duet album any different than everybody else's? And I came up with this weird idea. Could I take old records done by some of the great singers of all time and make them into duets? Well, the music technology has gone so far, we were able to do that. We were able to take off the old orchestras that sounded so old and scratchy and put brand new orchestras on it, and I do brand new arrangements and take the old scratchy vocals and make them into beautiful sounding vocals and make them into duets. Well, singing with Judy Garland and John Denver and Dusty Springfield and Louis Armstrong and Whitney Houston, it was an unbelievable experience. And if you listen to this record, it's a jaw dropper. They sound like we've done this record yesterday with these people that are such legends.
That's amazing. I'd imagine hearing Barry Manilow with Jimmy Durante or Sammy Davis Jr. or Louis Armstrong.
It's an amazing record.
Yeah, that's awesome. That had to have been a bunch of fun.
Yes, I was running for the Kleenex continually because singing with Whitney Houston when she was in perfect voice, it was really a very, very emotional experience.
Once again, my special guest on the Travel Guys, Mr. Barry Manilow.
I remember all my life.
Mr. Barry Manilow, thank you so much for spending some time with me, buddy, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks. This was great. Bye-bye.
I just can't
Well, there's just a little bit of magic in the country music we're singing. So let's begin. We're bringing you back down home where the folks are happy. Sitting, picking at a grin. Casually, you and me will pick up the pieces.
Richie Furay, Poco.
Let me touch
We are the Travel Guys on KFBK. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, along with my buddy Steve LaRosa. Our special guest, Richie Ferrey, joining us here on the radio today with the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Richie, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Hey, good to be with you guys today, and thanks for having me on.
We're talking to Mr. Richie Ferrey today, easily one of the greatest vocalists in the country rock genre. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as well as the Colorado Music Hall of Fame. He was one of the original members of Buffalo Springfield. He started Poco. He then went on to form the Souther Hillman Furay Band. And when we talk about Buffalo Springfield, many rock writers have described it as the first supergroup. You had Richie Furay. You had Stephen Stills, Neil Young.
Just an outstanding band. Richie, tell us, how did it come about that you ended up singing on a lot of the Neil Young songs on those early Buffalo Springfield albums?
I think Neil was kind of put in a box. He's got a unique voice. There's no doubt about it. It's a little bit different. And back in the day, people, the record company was thinking that maybe that voice would not be embraced like he's proven it to be over the years. So I was also basically looked upon as being one of the lead singers, and I wasn't, writing any songs at the time, or at least any that were getting recorded, and so I kind of got to do some of Neil's songs. I'm really glad that I did.
Richie and the band are coming to Harlow's on Friday, August 21st. Doors open 5:30, show at 6:30, and we're going to be front row for that for sure.
All right.
Richie, tell us about coming out of the Buffalo Springfield. You found a way to take country music and rock music and really create a new sound with your new group Poco, which included, a lot of people know, Jim Messina of Loggins and Messina, and then bassist Randy Meisner, who eventually went on to join the Eagles.
It all started when I wanted to put a steel guitar on a song that really had a country flavor on the last Buffalo Springfield record called Kind Woman. And we got Rusty Young to play steel guitar, and that was just the beginnings of it right there. We just said, yep, this is the sound we're looking for. Let's go with it. So it was something that it was planned, but it wasn't planned. And it worked out to the best, Poco made some dynamite music over the years, and certainly we had an impact on a couple guys, particularly on Glenn Frey, who used to sit in my living room when I was rehearsing Poco. So he and then took my bass player Randy Meisner, and they took it to the limit.
You still bring that joyful noise, that rare experience between artist and audience that happens on stage. Man, how do you continue to bring it decade after decade after decade and with this love affair between you and your audience?
The band loves to do it, and I also have to say that because we have, I mentioned Scott Fellon a few minutes ago, his son plays bass in the band, and then my daughter Jessie sings with us in the band, so it kind of keeps us young. I think of us as a multi-generational band.
If you're just joining us, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on KFBK. We're talking with country rock legend Richie Ferrey. We're talking with Richie Ferrey of Buffalo Springfield and Poco. Has a new CD out, the name of which is Hand in Hand. Let's take a listen to one of the cuts, which tells the story of Poco and the creation of country rock, entitled We Were the Dreamers.
We were the dreamers, shooting high for the stars, making rock and roll music, playing country guitars. We blaze a trail for generations to come. Yeah, we were the dreamers, just some kids having fun.
Yeah, just kids having fun. Richie, I tell you, listening to the vocals on that, as we age, generally we start to lose a little bit of that tonality and the ability to hit some of those notes. But, buddy, you still got it going on.
You know, I'm so thankful for that because I really do feel like my voice has gotten, it's aged. It's aged pretty good, if I can say so. And I mean, I'm very humbled by that.
I noticed that your daughter Jessie's voice blends in so nicely with your voice, and it kind of, it's reminiscent. I remember the local connection, our friend here from Sacramento, Timothy B. Schmidt, when he joined you. Mm-hmm. And I remember you in an interview saying how beautifully your two voices
blended. I mean, Tim and I, I still just marvel over the day, you know, because we did. We really sang really well together. And Jesse and I have that little special something. I guess it has to do with our DNA, but it's just so much fun to sing with my daughter because she's just a really talented singer, and she harmonizes, and just we blend really good together. So it's a lot of fun.
That was legendary Hall of Famer Richie Furay with Poco Buffalo Springfield. And well, I tell you, what a talented guy. And a special thanks to Steve LaRosa, our road reporter, for helping line up that interview. Tom Romano here with you. As I mentioned, Mark Hoffman is on the road. But I tell you what we've pulled out of the archives. As those of you that listen to the show on a regular basis know, Mark Hoffman is famous for lists. Lists that, well, make us all smarter travelers. Here's one of my favorites. Mark, one of the things that you're famous for on the Travel Guys radio show is your incredible lists. Lists of things to take with you when you go on vacation.
Things not to take with you when you go on vacation. People not to take with you.
Yes,
you
absolutely.
Vacation.
And things not to do on the plane to upset the steward.
The flight attendants.
I almost said stewardess.
Yeah, you almost.
That's one of the things you don't
would have upset every person in that occupation who might happen to be listening to the radio right now. Well, and I've got a list here today. This is Locals Tell All. This is from our friends at Smarter Travel. Mm-hmm. And it says the most annoying things tourists do in their city.
Do you have an example of something that would fit that maybe you do?
That I do? Yeah. I never do anything annoying when I'm on the road.
Okay.
I'm certain of it.
So it would be like when I travel to somewhere like and try to, you know, kiss the Liberty Bell.
Exactly. Well, here, all right, let me give you an example. I don't have an example for Sacramento, but here's the first one on the list. This is Washington, D.C. Metro escalator etiquette is a big one in the nation's capital. Walk on the left, stand on the right. In Washington, D.C., the escalators go into the underground, into the subway.
Right.
They're really long. So if you don't stand on the right side of the escalator and nobody can walk up it to get by you or walk down to get by you, people are racing for a train
right.
or racing to get to the street.
It's similar to when you're at an airport and they have the movable sidewalk.
Exactly.
And you want to stand on the right so those can pass on the left.
Exactly.
Same thing.
Okay. Exactly. So that in Washington, D.C., that's their pet peeve
okay.
about tourists.
I can believe that.
Okay. So you with me here now?
Yes,
All
got
right.
It.
So let's move to Philadelphia.
Okay.
Just a little ways up the coast here.
Philadelphia.
When ordering cheesesteaks in Philly, you have to know what you're doing so you don't hold up the line.
All right.
If you mess up, you might be sent to the back of the line. You basically say you want a cheesesteak and then specify whether you want cheese and what kind of cheese and or onions, and don't ask a lot of questions. Don't dawdle in line.
Oh,
this
boy.
Is very typical of East Coasters in either New York or Philadelphia. It's get out of the way. If you get to the front of the line and you don't know what you want, get out of the way. You know, I mean, it's because things are moving. It's not that people are trying to be rude to you. It's just like, if you didn't take the time you were standing in line to figure out what you need, then you need to get out of the way and let other people get past you.
Are there signs posted that prompt people to decide what you want before you get to the head of the line?
Occasionally there are. And yeah. trust me, if you get to the head of
have
the line in one
ready?
Of those cities and you don't have your order ready, the
yeah.
person behind you will let you know that you need to get out of the way.
is that what they say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In New York, that's what they say. Get out of the way. Yeah. I mean, I could walk out right now on the street and hear that in New York. All right. In San Francisco, jaywalking or ignoring the walk signs in the San Francisco crosswalk. San Francisco drivers are neither very skilled nor very safe. Use the crosswalks and do what the signs say. Now, in New York, mm-hmm. you could get away with that. Forget about the signs. You know, you just go any way you want. But in San Francisco, you can't do that because the drivers there, they don't give you the right of way.
No. In fact, in San Francisco, the rule is the people in the cars don't pay any attention to the stop signs or anything else.
Exactly. All right. Now, so we're going. Now we're going cross country to St. Petersburg, Florida. What do tourists do in St. Petersburg mm-hmm. that drives local people crazy? The snowbirds drive 10 miles below the limit at rush hour, make left turns from the far right lane, and make it impossible to park at the supermarkets. But they bring revenue to keep our businesses alive and our downtown thriving. And after May 1, we can enjoy our city again. So look at the positives, folks.
There you go.
So people, older folks in St. Petersburg, don't get out of the way. Again, a common theme that we're seeing here so far. All right, Traverse City, Michigan. Now, this is a really small city on the shores of the Great Lakes up in Michigan. Traverse City has many festivals. It's a beautiful area. But tourists use our beaches and parking lots like trash cans. Every evening, the beach cleaners have to clean up the mounds of trash people threw down. They come for the beauty and fun and leave the area a mess.
Ooh.
So you can see where that would, you know, that would aggravate people who lived in Traverse City. I get it. And here's one. This is a New York one. Stay out of the bike lane on the Brooklyn Bridge or any bridge. Tourists either walk in the lane or they stop and take pictures in the bike lane. There are pictures of bikes painted on the lane for those who do not read English. And I have to tell you, Tom, it's amazing because we are – we're just out on the Brooklyn Bridge with Tony yesterday, just over in Brooklyn doing the pizza.
Tony.
Yeah, Tony, the pizza guy.
Yeah,
we had a great tour. Tony couldn't be with us because he had a little medical procedure on short notice, and so one of his family members had to fill in. But anyway, we were in Brooklyn, and this is what they say: stay out of the bike lane. So you know, if you're on the Brooklyn Bridge, for God's sake, that lane that has the bicycles printed in it. That's the bike lane. So you'll want to stay out of there because let me just tell you, in Sacramento, if you're in the bike lane, somebody will probably, you know, ring a bell or do a little horn or something like that, but not perhaps in New York.
We are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. If you just tuned in, here brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. The list today is the things when you visit a city that annoy the locals the most. So as you listen to these, try not to do these things.
What do you suppose bothers people in Sacramento? Can you think of anything that tourists... We don't have that many visible tourists unless you go down to Old Town. I mean, really, around the railroad, I mean, most Sacramentans, I'm guessing, probably don't interact with tourists very much.
You know, not as much. And like you say, it would probably be in Old Town. And I don't know. I don't think there is a lot. Of course, I think in every city, people are annoyed by those that don't clean up behind themselves. They do leave trash and so forth.
Yeah, there seemed to be kind of a common theme there. It's don't trash our city. Don't leave it worse than you found it, and don't get in the way.
And I agree that don't get in the way. And once you pull up to the line, you better know what you're going to order, or you better get out of the way.
And let me just tell you, here in New York City, if between 4 and 6 in the afternoon, when people are heading home. It's really and truly. I mean, New Yorkers are not, they are really not rude people. They really are very nice folks, as long as you're not in the way. If you're in the way, then expect to get run over and probably fairly unceremoniously get run over. But if you stay out, if you stand out of the way and ask a New Yorker for directions, unless they're running for the last train of the night, they'll probably politely stop and answer your questions. They're used to seeing tourists there in New York City. All right, that's the end of my list.
And that's about the end of the Travel Guys radio show as well. One last piece of business. Time to announce our Sports Leisure Vacations Traveler of the Week. We didn't have a winner in the last 2 weeks, so we're now up to $300 travel voucher waiting for this week's traveler who traveled with us on our Vancouver Island trip. It's Wilbur Walston. Wilbur Walston. You give us a call at the Sports Leisure office at 361-2051. That's 361-2051 by Tuesday to claim your prize. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Travel Guys. I'm Tom Romano. Mark and Tom here to thank you for joining us each and every week. We'll see you next week, 3 o'clock, right here on KFVK. You stay well now.